fired, except I guess his new job is Santa, so we'll see how he works out at this job.
The presence of fighters I find a new peace. In the company of workers replenish myself. Of miners and weavers, of rebels and dreamers. When I sing of my brothers, I sing of myself.
Yankee Doodle came to town, 8 bombs in his pocket. Says, chum, if you don't toe the line, I'll blast you with me rocket.
Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman, also Superman, known from here to Vietnam as Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle went to Mars, landed on a Sunday, found some people living there, killed them off on Monday.
Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman, also Superman, known from here to Vietnam as Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle went to work as hard as he was able, bombing schools and hospitals and babies in the cradle.
Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman, also Superman, known from here to Vietnam as Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle's got a plan, it's called defoliation. Tried it out in Vietnam to civilize the nation.
Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman, also Superman, known from here to Vietnam as Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle, he's the boy for rape, assault, and pillage. Never lets a day go by without he burns a village.
Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman, also Superman, known from here to Vietnam as Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle never crosses over any border, except kill more people in the name of law and order.
Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman, also Superman, known from here to Vietnam as Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle feels that he is not appreciated. He's generous with his napalm, and yet somehow he's hated.
Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman, also Superman, known from here to Vietnam as Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle's got the know-how, death is what he teaches, and Mr. Heath just shows his teeth and murmurs little speeches. Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman, also Superman, known from here to Vietnam as Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Okay, we're on the line with Food Not Bombs and Coalition on Homelessness activist Hugh Mejia. Hi, Hugh.
Hi, Robert.
And Hugh, you've been up there keeping a pretty close tally on the recent casualty score and the Food Not Bombs arrest. What's been going on with Food Not Bombs since we tuned in? We knew that on October 22nd there was a series of brutal arrests where a man's thumb was actually broken, 7 people taken to jail. Then the 3 days after that, more arrests happened, and then I guess the next day there were still more arrests. Yeah, twos and threes, but you say there's been even more recent arrests on Monday.
Yeah, just a point of correction. There were, to the best of our knowledge, a total of 6 arrests on October 22nd. As opposed to 7.
Gotcha.
And that occurred right after the anti-police brutality October 22nd demonstration in San Francisco. About 50 San Francisco police, many of them in riot gear, arrived at the scene of the Food Not Bombs serving at UM Plaza. And they arrested a total of 6 people, one of whom was trying to serve bagels and water. Now, the most recent arrest, and by the way, it marks the 7th incident of resumed police harassment in San Francisco Food Not Bombs.
7th incident of arrests or arrests and citations?
Incidents of harassment, arrests, citations. There have been a total of 7 incidents or police encounters since Friday, September the 3rd.
Okay.
And of those seven incidents, four of them actually resulted in arrest. And the most recent one occurred this past Monday, November 1st. Sister Bernie Galvin, a religious witness of homeless people, and then also Jim Corder, long-standing Food Not Bombs supporter, were arrested Monday night while serving soup and bagels. Mm-hmm. And the police also confiscated a substantial portion of the soup and the bagels. Actually got into a momentary tug of war with one of the people there that was trying to get some bread, and they were actually playing a game of tug of war over a bag of bread.
Uh-huh.
They also confiscated some literature, and they confiscated a Food Not Bombs sign and a banner. So clearly they were interfering not only with the right to food, but the right to distribute information and engage in peaceful protest.
Now, when I talked to Claire, who was one of the people arrested on Friday, she told me that although initially arrests were for felonies, some of the charges were reduced, and some of them were even sort of discharged or delayed or dismissed. What's happening with the charges around this, and what are the charges? Are any charges remaining?
It's a little unclear to me at this point what cases the government's still prosecuting. I believe that of the 12 arrests, about 8 of those cases have been completely dropped, including the charges of allegedly violating the court order, which prohibits Food Not Bombs from distributing free food. There are 3 or 4 people still facing active charges, either for allegedly inciting a riot on October the 22nd, when in fact I think it was really the police that were trying to incite a riot, or alleged possession of a weapon. Supposedly someone had a pocket knife, and initially they were charged with possession of a dangerous weapon. I think that charge has been dropped down. Also, some people were charged with interfering or resisting arrest. Some of those people still are facing those charges. But many of the charges at this point have been either dismissed or discharged.
Now, in the past, of course, we heard from Willie Brown and from Terrence Hallinan, district attorney, who's currently, I guess, in a runoff election battle.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are, in fact.
Yes.
That they were not going to arrest Food Not Bombs. I guess the last arrest was that of Keith McHenry on the steps of the jail when they were doing a daily breakfast when I was in jail for serving free food for about 3 weeks. And although there have been a couple, visits to UN Plaza prior to September, there haven't been any arrests or any citations that I'm aware of. What has prompted this return, and is it, do you think this is likely to continue in the interim election period?
A couple points on that, Robert. First of all, historical correction. Actually, there were 28 arrests of Food Not Bombs members and supporters during a direct action protest back on Bastille Day of 1998, when Food Not Bombs and activists and various other groups took down the fences that had been set up by Department of Public Works at some of the grassy embankments at UN Plaza in downtown San Francisco.
I remember that, yeah.
Nobody got charged with serving food. It was just simply failure to disperse, interfering, resisting types of charges.
Gotcha.
And all of those charges were eventually dropped. Now, what prompted this new cycle of government and police harassment is still unclear. So far, nobody in Brown's office has been willing to make any public comments or explanations to the media about this. The police have been less than cooperative. All they've said was that, well, there is a standing court order, and we have not. Supposedly, the police have been saying, well, even though we haven't been enforcing it for the past 2 years, we haven't gotten any orders not to enforce it. So they're claiming that they've just decided to unilaterally start resumption of enforcement of the court order, and have not given any indication just where those orders came from to start arresting again.
Now, I'm asking, regarding the current election situation, we have Brown in a runoff with either Jordan or Ammiano at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, by the way, according to the Chronicle Examiner, it actually looks like at this point, it looks like Ammiano is actually leading over Jordan, so hopefully it will come to runoff between Tom Ammiano and Willie Brown.
Now, what about, isn't one of the key races the district attorney? Because Hallinan could refuse to prosecute these cases and has said in the past he will. Is he, assuming he's reelected, is there any indication, he hasn't dropped charges yet, though?
Well, Hallinan's office has dropped many of the charges. Now, that's another interesting point. One thing we have learned that's interesting is apparently at this point, there's a debate going on between District Attorney Hallinan's office and the City Attorney's office, which is headed by City Attorney Luis Rene. And this is very interesting. To make a long story short, it seems that the DA's office would prefer to drop all charges against Sudnabhams and would prefer that the police not in any way arrest Sudnabhams or interfere with Sudnabhams' activity. It seems that they've had to defer to the City Attorney's office because, one, it was the City Attorney's office that originally drafted the court order against Sudnabhams. In fact, it was Luis Rene herself that was one of the primary authors of that court order. And the other thing, too, is that unfortunately, because all attempts to seek injunctive relief through state and federal channels have failed, the court order, the court order basically has been upheld by the Supreme Court and also by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in the U.S. federal court system.
Now, in those actions, I take it it was upheld without comment, right? We didn't have any...
Right. In one case, it was upheld without comment, and in the other case, basically, they refused to hear it, with the exception of Judge Mosk in the state Supreme Court. The other justices were not inclined to hear the appeal on the summary judgment of the court order. Now, to make a long story short, what's interesting about this as it relates to the apparent resumption of police harassment of Sudnabhams is that apparently, because this is an election season, and apparently because Hallinan is probably going to face a very close runoff with Fazio, they apparently are under pressure. And apparently what they've told us is that, well, we don't want to prosecute Sudnabhams, but because this court order has been upheld by higher authorities, i.e., the state courts and also the federal courts, the district attorney's office would, in fact, also be in violation of the court order if they weren't to prosecute Sudnabhams for violation of the court order. In other words, it's kind of out of Hallinan's hands because it's been upheld by higher authorities.
Now, wait a minute. This order was upheld before Hallinan took office, as I understand it.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you see...
And throughout his office, he has not enforced this order.
Well, then you see, he could be in a lot of trouble, conceivably. Now, it's a very curious situation.
It's incredible to me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's a very curious situation. It sounds to me like there's a bit of buck passing going on here.
Yeah.
And I think there probably is quite a debate going on between the district attorney's office and the city attorney's office and certain other parties that we have yet to identify as to who is involved in the decision on arrest.
But Sudnabhams is every night continuing to serve food, right?
Yes, pretty much so. Sudnabhams is serving about 7 to 9 times a week, about 5 to 7 times nightly at UN Plaza from 5:30 to 7.
So in spite of the most recent arrest on Monday of Sister Bernie Galvin and her companion, that's still... Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and probably tonight, I guess tonight is Thursday.
Right, it's serving pretty consistently. They've been missing some meals on Fridays and Saturdays, but they've been serving pretty consistently every night now. And then there's also a meal at Golden Gate Park on Monday afternoons, and also at 16th and Mission.
Now, are there any complaints of health violations or sickness?
No, in fact, this is another interesting thing. Apparently, Monday night, this past Monday, after Sister Bernie and Jim Carter were arrested, two representatives of the health department did come by. They had their IDs with them, and we asked them a couple of occasions why they were there, and they said that they were there answering a call from some citizen about concern over someone who apparently had some type of psychiatric problem or was acting out. They said they had no interest in Sudnabhams. They were there for a very different reason.
So these are mental health officials?
Apparently, they deal with mental health issues, yes. They had no concerns about Sudnabhams.
Did they examine the psychiatric stability of the police force?
No, apparently they weren't concerned about the police force. Apparently they were looking for, quote, some homeless person, unquote.
Well, maybe, you have to be crazy to serve poor people food in public these days. Maybe that's what they're...
Right, but they denied any concern with Sudnabhams, which is very interesting. Apparently, any alleged complaints about compromised food safety on the part of Sudnabhams food distribution activities is not a high priority with the health department.
Now, for those who are just listening to this for the first time, it's my understanding that the original court order against Sudnabhams is part of a political pogrom designed to remove homeless people from the Civic Center area under then Mayor Art Agnos continued under Jordan, and we had hoped ceased under Brown, that the order was kept active because of compliant, dare we say, corrupt judges. Is that your understanding?
I think that's fairly accurate. Again, we have yet to completely sort this out, but because of the conservative reactionary nature of most people who are sitting on the bench, this court order has basically been left in place, and nobody in the city attorney's office or no one in Brown's administration has apparently been inclined to seek getting it dissolved.
Left in place, but essentially ignored for a total of over 900 meals since 1996, correct?
Right, basically ignored. The health department, there were a few other instances in 98 and 99 when the police or other government representatives would visit a Food Not Bombs meal, and they would ask whether or not Food Not Bombs had the necessary permits, which, by the way, you really can't obtain anymore, and that's another story.
Right, since the summer of 1990, Parks and Rec has essentially eliminated that process.
Right, you could only get, here's a very interesting point that your listeners may not be aware of. In the city and county of San Francisco, the way in which the park code is written, no organization or individual can obtain a permit to distribute free food in San Francisco unless it's in conjunction with a recreational event and it occurs no more than once every 90 days. So basically, it is impossible to obtain a permit to serve free food in public parks on a regular daily or weekly basis. You can only do it once every 90 days and it has to be in conjunction with a recreational event. So it's not even possible for Food Not Bombs to get all the necessary permits to legally do what it does on a daily basis.
Which essentially is give out vegetarian food that has caused no sickness whatsoever and apparently is wanted by numerous people, even in these so-called boom economy times.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's pretty obvious to anybody who, goes down to any regular feeding program that in spite of the so-called boom economy or prosperity of it in late 1990s, the problems of chronic hunger or substandard nutrition have not really abated. In fact, maybe they're getting worse. And there are a number of studies I could cite that would back that up. During the height of former Mayor Jordan's crackdown on Food Not Bombs, the San Francisco Food Bank published a study which was actually got pretty wide attention in the media that indicated that approximately one out of eight San Franciscans experiences hunger on a regular basis, and among other things stated for the record that the current free food programs in San Francisco are inadequate to address needs.
Well, I know the San Francisco Chronicle had some skeptical columnists kind of really looking askance at police behavior when they went after Marin students who were serving sandwiches to homeless people, but apparently Food Not Bombs is not getting much positive press. Is that the case?
Well, it has gotten some. I mean, there have been a couple of interviews on KPFA. In fact, as recently as yesterday, there was actually a rather extensive interview with a couple of Food Not Bombs supporters on KPFA on the Living Room program. There has also been at least two articles in the Bay Guardian and an editorial in last week's Bay Guardian about this. There has been some interest expressed by other news media as well. It looks like some articles about this recent arrest are going to get published both in the U.S. and abroad. So it is starting to get some coverage now in the media.
Tom Ammiano, the mayoral candidate who may be the runner-up, the man who surprisingly won, came from behind to win at least second place in a write-in campaign, essentially spending what? 2% of what Brown spent or something?
I'm sure it's far less than Brown. I'm not sure what the exact figure is, but probably far less.
I think he spent
far less than Clint Riley as well.
Oh, yeah, I think he spent $20,000 and Brown spent either hundreds of thousands or millions in this campaign.
Yeah, I don't know the exact figures, but I'm sure
so
Brown...
What's his position on Food Not Bombs? Has he spoken about it or not?
Tom Ammiano has indicated that if he does become mayor, he will seek... to have that court order against Food Not Bombs dissolved. And for that reason, along with a number of other reasons, many people in San Francisco are indeed hoping to see Tom Ammiano become the next mayor. normally I don't too much faith in the electoral process, but I actually think in this election there may be a real difference between the candidates.
Is Food Not Bombs still going strong, likely to be feeding every night, or are they beginning to weaken? What's happening with them?
Well, they can always use more help. Certainly, your listeners are more than welcome to give Food Not Bombs San Francisco a call. You're up in San Francisco and you want to help out or volunteer in any way, whether it's as a cook, a server, doing media work, doing legal support, doing media work. The voicemail number for Food Not Bombs San Francisco, by the way, is 415-675-9928. That's 24-hour voicemail. You can do call anytime. There's also an email address. It stands for San Francisco Food Not Bombs at Industrial Workers of the World, so it's actually spelled sffnbiww.org.
So, for those who didn't get that address and number, just give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we will give you all these details. Again, that's 423-HUFF. We're talking to Hugh Mejia, who's an activist up in San Francisco for over a decade, working to ensure that folks serving other folks free food are able to do so without police harassment. Is that anything else you want to say, Hugh?
That's all for now, Robert. It's an interesting story. I hope we can do a follow-up a bit later on this all.
Thank you very much.
All right.
That was Hugh Mejia up in San Francisco. This is Robert Norris down here in Santa Cruz, and we're at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Call-in number at the studio is 427-3772. In the studio with me is Criminal Santa James Ney. Quick announcement for those of you who have cable TV and get Channel 72, or is it Channel 71? I can never remember. Anyway, just keep switching between the two. You'll get it. There's a special Voices from the Village show, I think it's Channel 71, which is coming on for an hour, 7:30 to 8:30, and it will have a live interview with Arnie Leff, Sandy Brown, and John Malkin. These are all on the left side of the Citizens Police Review Board. That's the toy ARF ARF board that was created by Scott ARF Kennedy and Catherine Byers back in 1994 and their pals on the city council to essentially put aside issues of police misconduct in a sort of a file and forget room. And what's been happening since is some people have been trying to activate and vitalize that board, much in the same way you might say that the Homeless Issues Task Force has been trying to become the Homeless Issues Task Force. And three of these members, Arnie Leff, who is now the chair of the board, Sandy Brown, who is a vocal and active member of the board and is probably about to resign from the board. From what rumors I hear, she may want to leave it because she's just hasn't got the time for it. And John Malkin, who was literally driven off the board 2 or 3 years ago, but by essentially collaborationists with the police department on the board who just wouldn't support him. We've talked about Malkin's case. He's a regular broadcaster here on Free Radio Santa Cruz every Saturday, I guess every other Saturday night. He has a show called The Great Leap Forward, 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. And actually it is every Saturday night, but he has a live show, I think, every other Saturday night. He's going to be live down there at the community television station. And the number to call in if you want to simply talk about why the hell don't we have a decent review process for police misconduct is 425-4920. That's 425-4920. That's the call-in number for Voices from the Village. And that's happening in about 10 minutes down at Channel 71, Voices from the Village. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the Citizens Police Review Board to orient all you folks who may be interested in calling in. I have talked about this board, probably talked much too much about this board. But since I jabber, let me jabber on. Their next meeting is Monday, November 8th. They hold their meetings on the second Monday of every month, one meeting per month. And it generally lasts about 2 or 3 hours. It starts at 5:30. It's in the City Council Chambers, which is across from the main library in the Civic Auditorium. It's open to the public. There's oral communications, that is to say, public comment period, for the first half hour or so. And they used to have a more liberal period, and they still kind of do. I've been pushing the chair, Arnie Leff, to reestablish essentially unlimited oral communications, but he got tired of hearing endless talk about the Santa Cruz Five, as he saw it. Those are the five individuals who were falsely arrested and brutalized on May 22nd in connection with the Yugoslavian protest, the protest against the Yugoslavian bombing by the U.S.-backed NATO forces, and the McPherson Center, Sam Farr shindig that this protest happened in front of. Actually, there have been some recent developments in that case. Steve Argue, as you probably know, was convicted of punching Officer Dave LeFevre in what Argue and others contend, and I think quite credibly, was a defense of a woman holding a child who LeFevre was menacing, in essence, under color of law. Another individual, Vinny Lombardo, also a regular at Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster, he pled to a charge of resisting arrest, although there was no underlying charge of what he was being arrested for when he was resisting arrest. Ah, that convenient charge. What happened was a bunch of people surrounded a police van after a woman had been arrested, who I believe charges have now been dropped against, either for insufficient evidence or confusion of identity. The claim was she was playing a boombox with the sounds of the Yugoslavian bombing at a volume that disturbed the folks eating their pastries inside at the Democratic Party fundraiser at the McPherson Center. And, of course, nobody asked her to turn down the boombox. Nobody asked the crowd to shut up. They just waded in and started arresting people, or in this case arrested her. The crowd defensively surrounded the van to say, look, what's going on here? What are the charges? And then the police started picking on particularly the people with the kids. So a woman from Canada named Julianne and her partner named Almond, who had a 5-year-old and 2-year-old respectively on their backs and literally clinging to them, and they were also part of the crowd surrounding the van. There's been some discussion about, is it a wise idea to surround a van with a child in your arms? No, it's not. But these things happen. It happened at this protest. The police should have known better. They fucked up. And instead of acknowledging their problems and taking responsibility for the issue so we could all grow beyond this, they went around and, of course, declared they were absolutely right, and in collusion with the DA's office, they charged 5 people with crimes, and Argue is facing a sentencing hearing on November 23rd now, I believe it is, in Judge Attuck's court, and he may go to jail for up to, I think it was up to 5 years, he said up to 4 years, probably more like 6 months, but it's ridiculous. And it's an attempt, essentially, to silence any kind of examination of what the police department does and the mistakes it makes. It's just preposterous. Anyway, what I want to talk, however, about the Citizens Police Review Board, and I kind of went off into this. The Citizens Police Review Board has an oral communications period. It's meeting next Monday, 5:30. You can go to it. There are going to be a number of interesting things on the agenda, and the Police Review Board has showed a tendency to let people talk about agenda items as well as make statements at oral communications about just general concerns about the police. As a kind of a kicker, there's also going to be my complaint against Sergeant Steve Clark is coming back. There's not going to be a public hearing on it, but I will talk publicly about it before they go into closed session. Clark, if you may remember, those of you who've heard about this on my show, went after a man named Anthony Douglas, a street spirit vendor. That's the newspaper that's sold on the street by homeless people. In this case, he was panhandling near the Cinema 9. Clark, a rather nasty, I got to say that word, smug sergeant who also sits, ironically, on the podium where the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, I'm not sure if I have that exactly right, but I think that's it, the city's Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women meets. He's their official liaison, the police department's liaison. He sits up there supposedly helping women attacked by violent men in what I have to regard as a form of hate crime, and yet he, on this date, which was in April of this year, came up to Anthony Douglas and essentially, by Douglas's account, and I believe Douglas, told him, get off the mall, you can't do what you're doing here, I don't want you here. And what Douglas was doing was panhandling. And it's legal to panhandle, folks. There are nasty restrictions that have been put in place by the Downtown Merchants Association, the Downtown Ordinances, but it is still legal, provided you don't do it from a seated position, provided you do it during daylight, provided you don't do it in a crosswalk, 10 feet from a store, 50 feet from an ATM. There's a whole series of restrictions. You can pick up a little pamphlet at the host center, but it is still legal to panhandle it. And he was familiar with those restrictions, I'm assuming, because he's been dealing with the police. And yet, Clark came up and just gave him this blanket, get out of the mall threat, and showed him his badge, even though he was in plain clothes. And Douglas immediately came over to me. I was standing off to the side at a homeless table near the bookshop Santa Cruz, and I went across the street and I confronted Sergeant Clark, and I said, Sergeant Clark, what are you doing? And Clark just sort of sneered at me in his usual manner, kind of his standard approach. I've talked about Clark before. Clark is the fellow who after he took homeless blankets from the City Hall sleepers protest 3 years ago. When asked, hey, why are you taking the blankets? It's cold and wet, and all you need to do is take a picture of them. Why are you doing this? He turned and, with a smirk, said, because I can. And that, of course, has become classic Clark. Because I can, Clark is what we call him now. And you can see him kind of parading around town with other police officers. He paraded into the courtroom of the Steve Argue sentencing hearing. They actually tried to sentence Steve, I guess it was 2 days ago, and the courtroom was just crammed with police officers. You know, you've heard of the police officers complaining about how council members Crone and Sugar spent, I don't know, what was it, 15 minutes at the Argue trial, and of course, we're nowhere near the sentencing hearing, but this entire courtroom, or half of it, I should say, was crammed with officers in blue, sergeants, lieutenants, vice chiefs, deputy chiefs, you name it, man. There was, I would say, probably about a third of the Santa Cruz Police Department was in that room. It looks like some of them were on duty because they were in uniform. And, of course, I think Bernard Klitzner, an activist involved in the sleeping ban protests, filed a complaint about that with the Citizens Police Review Board. And I think it's, by the way, good to file complaints, even though, just don't do so in the expectation that anything is going to be done by the police chief or even by the Citizens Police Review Board, but it does make an important record that defense attorneys can use in pitchess motions. That's important, and many folks know that already because you listened to the show and you've picked up that information. But for those of you who are new, there's a good reason to call 420-6295. That's the CPRB, Citizens Police Review Board, number, 420-6295. If you have a problem with an officer, say, please call me back. I'd like some help in filing a complaint. And they'll do it. They usually open in the mornings from 9 to 1, Monday through Friday. And there's some minor changes in that, so you should call to be sure you don't go down to a closed office. Anyway, what's coming up on the agenda, and you're going to hear the whole Citizens Police Review Board discussion if you tune in now to Channel 71, hearing the head of the board, Arnie Leff, and one of the more outspoken members, Sandy Brown, and an outspoken member who was fired, John Malkin, at 425-4920. That's the community TV call-in number for that Voices from the Village show. But you'll also be able to see the board in action on Monday. Monday they're going to be there sitting around their podium, and they have an agenda coming up. They've announced a public hearing about CSOs, community service officers. These are the people in light blue, like Officer Malafe. I've talked about him earlier in the show, the fellow who likes older gentlemen who are trembling and have disabilities and also are panhandling to stand up as they panhandle. I think it's part of his exercise program for the elderly, and who is notorious for rather sadistic, or I should say utterly ignorant, enforcement of his own version of get those scum out of town type anti-homeless laws. Indeed, the downtown ordinances are get the scum off the mall type laws, but he doesn't even enforce those laws. He makes up his own. And currently, the Citizens Police Review Board has no jurisdiction over CSOs because the CSOs were created by the police department after the law was passed in 1994. Now, they don't have any jurisdiction over police either, really, but they can review police complaints. That is to say, when you file a complaint about a police officer, the police department investigates the complaint. They send out a police officer. They call you up. They supposedly interview the witnesses. They write up a report, and then that goes to the Citizens Police Review Board, which looks it over and decides whether they like what the police officer did. Not much of a review process, I must say. There's no independent investigating going on here as a rule. I mean, in fact, without exception up to now. So, would adding CSOs to this make any difference? Well, maybe a little, because if the CSOs know that people they're going to be maybe dissed or even looked at by the police review board, something might change. However, I got to point out that even under our new and improved board, the board is appointed by the city council, for those of you who don't know, and the city council supposedly had a great sea change last fall when the wonderful Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice were elected, supposedly to herald a new generation of public process, a new generation of public participation, fairness, bringing in people who had previously been excluded. We all believed this bullshit when it was rolled out as the scan line back in 1998 when these people were elected. And unfortunately, their appointees, although sincere, are stuck in a situation where, well, I'll give you a few examples. They're coming up on this board. There's the CSO matter, which has been sitting around for about a year. I mean, it's a very minor change in the law. It says, yeah, include CSOs and along with police officers in allowing the Citizens Police Review Board to review, to look over, peek over the shoulders of the policemen as they do their investigation. And that's probably going to pass. And it's a very minor thing. They should have done it months ago without any fal-de-ral or hoop-de-ha. They should have just been done. But instead, they're taking their time, and now they're finally getting it done. The big issue that has been up has been the issue of the independent investigation of the May 22nd events. That's the Santa Cruz Five. That's the police that, instead of acknowledging screw-ups in their crowd control processes, false arrests, taking the wrong people into custody, totally, what do you call it, ineffectual crowd control. Much as I dislike the San Francisco police, they do better. I mean, they act like they were at a cocktail party, these police officers, and just sort of chose certain people to fuck with. That's not what you do when you want to keep a crowd away from a van. You know, I mean, you surround the van with police officers, and you move out until, you know, people move away. I mean, and that presumably is what you do. Or you issue a public warning on a loudspeaker, get away from the van or you will be arrested. None of these things were done. Instead, they simply targeted individuals in the crowd, went after them, and then when the crowd, concerned that it was a man with a child and a woman with a child, intervened, they went after the crowd instead of trying to retain the prisoners that they supposedly felt were so dangerous or worthy of arrest. Anyway, it's all under investigation, supposedly by the first ever independent investigator in the history of Santa Cruz and of the Santa Cruz's Citizens Police Review Board, a woman named Diana Christensen, who comes down 3 days a week from Berkeley and is being paid something like, well, there's a $10,000 expense account on this. I'm not sure how much of that she's getting, but she's getting paid to do it. And what's happened is the police department is balking. They are saying, we will not cooperate at all with this independent investigation. We aren't going to show up, is what they're saying. And worse, their friends in the government, namely the city attorney, John Barisone, is saying, oh, well, the entire investigation by this independent person will have to be kept completely under wraps, because the minute you talk to a police officer, that could become part of his disciplinary file, and therefore it's in confidence. It's part of his personnel record. Of course, the reason you hire an independent investigator is to make a public investigation of what's going on. Police officers have to be accountable for their actions publicly. And we have to see that when they're being investigated, it's being done in a fair way, not behind closed doors, but an open process. We have to see that that's happening. And that's why this investigator was called in, to do an investigation independent of the police department, which is the group that has investigated every other complaint for the last 100 years in Santa Cruz, if they've investigated those complaints at all, even after the Citizens Police Review Board was formed. So that's what's happening on Monday. What's happening is that the city council was told by the city attorney, oh no, this independent investigator, she's going to have to keep it all quiet, even if she investigates. And it's all going to be confidential, and the state law requires that. And state law also requires that it all be kept, hush-hush. And, of course, the Citizens Police Review Board said, wait a minute. If you do that, the whole investigation is pointless, and we're going to look like a bunch of idiots. More important, there's going to be no real independent investigation, because nobody will be able to hear of it. An investigation people don't hear of is like, dropping a stone in a forest where nobody is around to listen. It may have fallen, but nobody knows it. So what's the point? In fact, I would say it's likely to lead to a backlash which abolishes that Citizens Police Review Board, which some think is a good idea. I don't know if it's a good idea or not. I know they're not doing shit, really. But again, with my eternal optimism and the idea that there could possibly be some forward-leading action here, I think, I don't know what I think on this issue, frankly. I go back and forth in different ways. And I'm eager to hear from you. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm talking about the Police Review Board meeting that's coming up on Monday. It's also being discussed even as we speak over Channel 71. That's Voices from the Village on television. If you get cable television, Arnie Leff, Sandy Brown, John Malkin. They're going to be talking about the May 22nd case, actually, and they'll be showing a film clip of the officer being punched by Steve Argue, possibly, or at least a clip of the surrounding police behavior and misbehavior. in this matter. So you might want to tune in there. That's going on. Other things on the police review board agenda that are coming up, I filed a complaint against Police Chief Belcher, that is to say the head of the Santa Cruz Police Department. And the nature of the complaint has to do with this covering up an incident that happened a year ago, which also had to do with Steve Argue, coincidentally. That's when he sold newspapers in front of the New Leaf and was falsely arrested for doing so because the arresting officer Garner claimed you can't sell a street newspaper without a license, which isn't true. Threw him down to the ground, smashed his head into the sidewalk, and they dragged him up and held him in solitary for 4 days. This, of course, was the same day. Earlier in that day, a picture had appeared of him and two council members at a police a rally against police violence in the shooting of Happy John Dine, which, by the way, is a man who was killed in November of 1997, and that anniversary is coming up again. Anyway, the police chief covered this up by issuing me a letter that essentially ignored the fact that there was an underlying charge of selling a street newspaper, which is simply not a valid basis for an arrest. And again, the police chief would have done better if he'd simply admitted it and said, "We screwed up. Sorry." You know, maybe there would be some legal liability, but more important, the responsibility of the police department is to protect the civil rights of this community. And they do that by stopping people from violating them, like taking your property, beating you up, shooting you, or they bring those people to justice, we hope, who do that. Well, if they take on a different role, and they believe that they somehow are the law, they can create the laws, they can ignore laws that exist, they can imprison people without just laws, and then cover that up at the highest levels, then we are in a difficult situation. And I filed a complaint against Police Chief Steve Belcher about this issue. And the point I made to the Citizens Police Review Board was, you cannot have the police department investigating a complaint about the police chief. It just doesn't work. There's a clear conflict of interest. And I said, an independent body has to do that. I don't know whether it's the garbage department, you know, or high school 23 down the road, or, you know, a group of individuals deputized from the coffee roasting company. I don't care. You need somebody else other than the police department. And instead of looking into this issue seriously, the CPRB has threw it to the city manager and said, "Oh, well, why don't you investigate it?" And the city manager wrote me a snide letter which said something to the effect of, "Oh, well, the case has already really kind of been looked at. We're not interested." So that is coming back to the Citizens Police Review Board on Monday. For those of you who are interested, again, that's City Council Chambers, 5:30 on Monday. There'll also be a question about setting a meeting date for driving while black and brown hearing stops. That's the business of cops stopping you based on racial profiles, and or we might even say economic profiles in the case of the homeless. That's going to be coming up hopefully for a public hearing. They're going to talk about doing that. There's a report from the Homeless Task Force meetings from Sandy Brown, who has been trying to get information about the police department, and the police department have essentially stonewalled her for 5 months on whether what the stats are on the homeless beatings. See, the police don't regard the beating of homeless people as a hate crime. Steve Clark has said that. Chief Belcher has said that. I believe recently, Lieutenant... it's not Saponi. Another lieutenant has said that. It has been said that there is no hate crime pattern of behavior against homeless people. Now, I would be the first to admit that recent beatings against the homeless have been less than in the first part of this year, as far as I know. However, there seemed to be a clear pattern of beatings that were directed at homeless people. And we had Aaron Birch on the air. I have a tape of Joe Barker, which I'm going to be playing. Aaron Birch is a man convicted of the hate crime of assaulting a homeless person. It wasn't called a hate crime by the judge. I call it a hate crime. Birch, in his interview with me, denied it. He said he was defending a friend. I don't believe him. I interviewed Barker, and I interviewed other people to that scene, and I believe that he came in, along with three or four other people, and kicked the shit out of Joe Barker. Not just kicked it, that he smashed a bottle across his forehead. I believe that another person slammed a planter box, or a wooden planter box-like substance, into Barker's stomach and ribs. Another person broke a stick across his thigh. Another person slugged him in the face. This was for the crime of being a homeless person asleep, in an area where he actually had permission to sleep, along with three other homeless people. And this is one of 30 assaults, at least, on homeless people in this last year. This is, by the way, something City Council has done nothing about. We've asked repeatedly for there to be a safe zone for people to be able to go during the night where they can sleep, not patrolled by police, but where they can sleep in groups in well-lit areas. Let's say there are three parks, De La Vega Park, San Lorenzo Park, Harvey West Park, where it could be opened up at night. People would leave by the morning. Not a very big thing to ask when you have a public safety crisis. The police, the Citizens Police Review Board may or may not be making a recommendation on this issue. There's also a question of observer guidelines. The CPRB is going to be looking into this. How far away do you have to be when you're watching the police doing their thing? This is becoming important because there's a group called Santa Cruz Cop Watch, which has formed. It has meetings every Wednesday night, 7:30 at the Rye Zone, for those of you who are interested. That's 224 Walnut Street, 7:30 every Wednesday night. And they're trying to document police behavior to make sure that it doesn't get out of bounds by keeping an eye on what's going on. And how far away should they be able to stand? Well, I've generally thought 10 feet is the general rule. You know, I mean, there might be situations where you can get closer, other situations where you should be further away. But that issue is coming up, and that's going to be discussed at that meeting as well. What else is happening at that meeting? I think that's pretty much the show. To give you an idea of how a police review board meeting actually goes, I'm going to read from the minutes of the last meeting to give you an idea of what they did.